So, picture this. It is the 18th century, and there is a physicist named Ernst Chladni.
Oh yeah, Chladni.
Right. And he takes this horsehair violin bow and he drags it across the edge of this flat metal plate. And the plate is covered in a really thin layer of sand.
Just ordinary sand.
It's just sand. And when he bows it, he accidentally makes visible these exact mathematical patterns that are actually humming inside your brain right now.
It's such a stunning visual to imagine. I mean, if you've never seen a video of a Chladni plate experiment, it honestly looks like pure magic.
It really does.
Because Chladni was he was originally just trying to find a way to see sound, to make sound visible. But what he actually revealed on that plate was a universal principle of physics. A mathematical reality that is completely upending how we understand human consciousness and basically the entire architecture of the mind today.
Right, because normally when we talk about the brain, we rely on a very specific, very tired vocabulary. You know, we talk about it like it's a MacBook. We discuss processing power and circuits and hard drives, rewiring coding software
Yeah,
updates.
the hardware and software paradigm,
Exactly.
it has been the dominant metaphor in neuroscience and psychology for decades, really. We look at the mind as this biological computer that just crunches data.
Right.
And, it's a useful framework, but it might actually be entirely the wrong lens
Wow.
because there's this breakthrough mathematical framework, and it was pioneered by a neuroscientist named Selin Anisoy. And it suggests we shouldn't be looking at the brain as a machine that computes at all, like not at all.
Okay.
We should be looking at it as a physical, vibrating, musical instrument.
A physical instrument. So like a resonant body playing an acoustic symphony, basically,
Exactly
which
right.
is amazing. And that is exactly what we are getting into today. We are doing a deep dive into this expansive article from the OOTW Journal, and it's titled Connectome Harmonics, the Music of the Brain.
It's a great piece.
It is. And the mission for this deep dive is to see how this isn't just, you know, a poetic metaphor about the universe vibrating or whatever. It is a mathematically rigorous framework that actually decodes what happens to the brain's quote unquote music under the influence of LSD.
Right.
And it explains why teetering on the very edge of total chaos is actually the optimal state for human cognition, which is
It
wild.
is wild. It's one of the most elegant frameworks to emerge in modern neuroscience, precisely because it bridges objective physics and complex mathematics with the deeply subjective human experience of consciousness.
Okay, let's unpack this because I want to go back to that metal plate for a second, the Chladni plate.
Sure.
So when he dragged the violin bow across the edge, you know, the metal vibrated, but the sand didn't just bounce around and fall off the table into a messy pile. Like you would expect it to just vibrate off right.
Right, you'd think it would just scatter everywhere.
Yeah, but instead the grains of sand, they leaped into the air and settled into these incredibly intricate, perfectly symmetrical geometric patterns, like invisible mandalas suddenly appearing out of nowhere. Why does the sand do that?
Well, it comes down to the physics of standing waves. You see, when you bow that plate, the entire object vibrates. But it has natural resonant modes, and those are based entirely on its specific shape, its size, and its density.
Okay, so the shit matters.
The shape is everything.
Yeah.
Because of how the waves bounce back and forth across the metal, there are specific lines on that plate that literally cancel each other out.
Oh.
So they remain perfectly still.
Oh.
Meanwhile, the areas between those lines are just vibrating wildly.
I see. So the sand just naturally bounces off the vibrating parts and gets trapped in the still lines.
Precisely. The sand is just drawing a map of the plate's hidden acoustic geometry.
Wow.
So the shape of the object dictates the harmonics it can produce. And every physical object in the universe has these. I mean, think about when you pluck a guitar string, you don't just get one random
Why
vibration.
wouldn't you get a note?
You get a fundamental tone plus a whole series of higher overtones.
Okay.
And those overtones are standing waves that mathematically fit perfectly into the exact physical length of that specific string.
So the complex sound that we hear is really just a sum of these simple harmonics dictated by the physical geometry of the instrument.
Exactly. Which brings us to Anisoy's breakthrough in 2016, because she asked, well, what if we apply this exact same physics to the human brain?
Because the brain, just like a guitar string or a metal plate, has a highly specific, measurable physical geometry.
Yes.
And in neuroscience, we call that the connectome,
Right, the connector.
which
Right.
is the vast comprehensive map of the brain's white matter wiring, like the actual physical cables linking every region of the brain to every other region.
Yes, the structural wiring diagram of the mind. So Anisoy reasoned that if harmonic patterns are strictly set by physical geometry, then the connectome must have its own mathematically inevitable natural harmonics.
Uh-huh.
The electrical signals traveling through it should naturally organize into standing waves.
Okay, let's unpack this a little more, because I'm struggling to buy this premise just a little bit.
Yeah, fair enough.
Because a guitar string is pulled taut over a hollow wooden acoustic chamber.
Right.
And a cladney plate is a rigid piece of metal.
Yeah.
My brain is a dense, squishy lump of fat and water encased in a dark bone cavity.
Yes, it is.
So how on earth can standing waves travel through that? I mean, it's not physically vibrating inside my skull, is it? Like shaking.
No. The brain tissue itself is not physically shaking back and forth like a drumhead. We are talking about the flow of electrical and electrochemical signals.
Oh, okay.
But those signals, they don't just float freely in a vacuum. They're forced to travel along the brain's physical wiring diagram, the white matter tracks.
So the waves are electrical, but they are confined by the physical shape of the wiring.
Yes. And Adesoy wanted to prove that this electrical activity behaves exactly like acoustic waves. So to do that, she used a mathematical operation called a Fourier transform.
Okay, let's ground that for a second, because if I am terrible at math, which I am, what is a Fourier transform actually doing?
Well, imagine I hand you a completely blended fruit smoothie. And I ask you to tell me exactly how many strawberries, bananas, and blueberries went into it.
I'd have no idea.
Right. Well, Fourier transform is a mathematical tool that magically unblends the smoothie.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It takes a complex, messy signal like a chaotic sound wave or a dense web of brain waves, and it reverse engineers it into the exact simple, pure harmonic tones that combine to make it.
So she took the complex physical map of the connectome, the physical wiring, and ran it through this mathematical unblender and basically computed what its natural baseline harmonics should be.
Exactly. And the result she found was honestly staggering. Because for decades, neuroscientists have mapped what we call resting state networks.
Right.
And these are the baseline patterns of brain activity that just naturally hum along when you're awake, but you're not doing any specific demanding task.
So it's like the brain's idling engine.
Yes, exactly.
The baseline hum of consciousness.
So Adesoy's math proved that those highly documented resting state networks emerge naturally as the fundamental harmonic wave patterns of the connectome.
Wait, really?
Yes. Her framework showed that our baseline brain states are literally just the lowest, simplest acoustic chords dictated by the shape of our neural wiring.
So any conscious moment, any given brain state is essentially just a chord.
Yes, a specific combination of these harmonics, each contributing its own pure tone.
That is a beautiful way to visualize thought. I mean, really. But it sets up a massive logical question.
What's that?
Well, if my baseline resting tuning is dictated strictly by my physical white matter wiring, what happens when someone introduces a powerful chemical agent like a psychedelic?
Well, that is exactly what Adesoy and her colleagues, Robin Carhart Harris, Morten Kringelbach, and Gustavo Deco, they wanted to find that out in 2017.
Okay.
They took this harmonic decomposition framework and they applied it to fMRI scans of people who had been given LSD. And they compared those to people given a placebo.
So they were looking for the exact mathematical signature of a psychedelic trip written in the language of harmonics. But I need to stop you here, because there is a logical gap I'm seeing. You just established that the music is entirely dictated by the physical geometry of the brain, the connectome.
I did, yeah.
LSD doesn't instantly mutate the physical white matter of your brain, right? The instrument's physical shape hasn't changed?
No.
So how can the music possibly change if the instrument itself hasn't physically morphed?
What's fascinating here is that is the crucial mechanical question. You are right that the physical cables of the white matter connectome, they remain identical.
Right.
But LSD binds heavily to a very specific type of serotonin receptor in the brain, the 5-HT2A receptor.
Okay.
And these receptors are densely packed in certain high-level regions of the cortex. So when LSD activates them, it massively alters the excitability of those specific regions.
So it changes how much energy is flowing through certain parts of the wiring, even if the wiring itself hasn't moved?
Yes. Think of a grand piano, the physical shape of the strings and the wood.
Yeah.
It doesn't change when you sit down to play. But LSD essentially presses down the sustain pedal and starts routing high amounts of energy into strings that normally sit entirely quiet. It changes the functional routing over the exact same physical architecture.
Oh, okay. That makes perfect sense. So what did that actually look like mathematically when they unblended the fMRI data of the tripping brains? Because I imagine it's not just a subtle shift.
Oh, it wasn't subtle at all. It was a dramatic shift across three distinct dimensions.
Okay.
First, they saw that the total energy of the brain's harmonics increased. The amplitude of the resonant waves went up across the board.
So the music just got louder.
Yep.
The instrument was being played with much more force.
Yes, exactly. Second, the sheer repertoire of the harmonics expanded. So the brain started accessing a much wider variety of its possible vibrational modes.
I see. So it wasn't just playing louder. It was playing far more notes simultaneously.
Much more complex.
And the high-frequency notes specifically, right, because the article highlights that in a normal, sober, waking state, the brain relies heavily on low-frequency harmonics. These broad, slow, highly synchronized waves.
Yes, because efficiency is the brain's primary goal in everyday life. Mm. High-frequency harmonics are intricate, highly complex, fine-grained wave patterns. They take an immense amount of energy to maintain.
Right.
So the brain actively suppresses them most of the time. But under LSD, those dormant high-frequency harmonics just lit up.
So here's where it gets really interesting. An ordinary waking state is sort of like plucking out a simple, familiar four-chord pop song on the low end of a piano.
Mm.
But LSD is like suddenly growing three extra hands and just smashing the highest, most complex keys all the way up the right side of the keyboard.
That is a massive expansion of the expressive range, yes. Your brain doesn't need to play those complex high-frequency overtones just to, you know, help you commute to work or answer an email.
No, definitely not.
It relies on the simple, low-energy chords to get you through the day. But the psychedelic state forces the instrument to utilize the entire keyboard.
It is wild that we have a clean, quantitative way to measure a state of consciousness expanding like that. But, you know, expanding the keyboard sounds great in theory. In practice, hitting all those high keys at once could just sound like a wall of disorganized noise.
Right, it could. But the researchers found that this explosion of high-frequency chords, it isn't just random static. The math actually shows the brain is pushing itself toward a very specific, highly prized state in physics.
The concept of criticality.
Yes.
Or, as the article calls it, the edge of chaos. Now, usually we think of chaos as a bad thing, like we associate it with total system failure or a mental breakdown. Why would teetering on the edge of chaos be the ultimate sweet spot for a brain?
Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture, to understand criticality, you have to look at physical systems on a spectrum. So on the far left side, you have rigid order. Imagine an ice crystal.
Okay, an ice crystal.
The water molecules are locked into a highly predictable, highly stable structure.
But it's frozen.
Right.
It can't adapt or change its shape without shattering.
Exactly. It's totally rigid. Now go to the far right side of the spectrum to pure chaos. Imagine a gas.
Okay.
The molecules are bouncing off each other completely randomly. It's pure noise. It's completely unpredictable with absolutely no structure to hold on to.
So if absolute order is an ice crystal and absolute chaos is a gas, what is the edge of chaos?
It is the exact transition zone between them, the melting point.
Yeah.
In physics, criticality is the poised boundary where a system is maximally flexible and maximally sensitive to new inputs.
Wow.
It has enough structural order to retain information, but enough chaos to process new information and adapt to its environment.
So it's liquid water flowing.
Yes, it's flowing water. Mm-hmm. It is the only place where a system can support the richest, most complex patterns. I mean, think about it. Absolute order in the human mind looks like rigid, inflexible thinking.
Right.
It looks like deeply ingrained habits or rumination depression or severe obsessive compulsive loops. It is a frozen mind basically stuck in a rut.
And absolute chaos would be a complete inability to form a coherent thought or memory, just pure static.
Exactly. But the edge of chaos criticality, that is where the brain is most alive. It can form novel configurations, entertain completely new perspectives, and break out of unhelpful loops without just dissolving into pure static. And under LSD, the harmonic activity self-organizes right at this critical boundary.
This perfectly mirrors another major theory the article brings up, the entropic brain hypothesis, which was proposed by Robin Carhart-Harris.
Yes, it does.
He argued that psychedelics increase the entropy, or the disorder of the brain, moving it out of its rigid, predictable baseline into a state of higher flexibility.
Yes, and what is so compelling here is that we have two completely independent mathematical lenses. Measuring entropy on one hand and unpacking connectome harmonics on the other.
Right.
And they both point to the exact same physical phenomenon.
Yeah.
The brain unlocking its most adaptable state by hovering near chaos.
I want to ground this even further because all this math, you know, criticality, Fourier transforms high frequency harmonics. It's fascinating. But how does it translate into the actual lived human experience?
What do you mean?
Well, someone takes a psychedelic and they report profound things like ego dissolution, intense geometric visions, or a feeling of completely merging with the universe. Does the harmonic framework actually explain that?
It provides a stunning explanation, actually, particularly for the dissolution of the ego. In traditional neuroscience, we often fall into the trap of trying to find the physical location of the self.
Yeah.
We look for a central command room, somewhere in the prefrontal cortex where the ego sits.
The little pilot steering the meat suit behind our eyes.
Exactly, the pilot. But connectome harmonics suggest the ego isn't a physical place at all. The ego is simply a habitual cord.
A habitual cord.
Yeah.
So my sense of identity, my personality, quirks, my anxieties, my narrative of who I am, it's just a specific combination of low-frequency resting state harmonics that my brain has practiced playing over and over again.
It is a practiced resonance pattern. And when you take LSD, you flood the system with energy and you force the instrument to play a massively expanded repertoire of high-frequency harmonics.
Yeah.
So the brain can no longer sustain just that one familiar chord. The habitual resonance is structurally disrupted.
Oh, wow. So the ego isn't a dictator we have to overthrow.
Yeah.
It's just our favorite Spotify playlist stuck on repeat. And a psychedelic experience essentially hits shuffle and adds a million musical genres we've never even heard before.
That is a brilliant way to conceptualize it, yeah. When that familiar low-frequency chord stops dominating the acoustic space of your mind, the subjective experience is that the boundaries of the self collapse.
Right.
Your internal map of me versus the outside world dissolves because the physical resonance maintaining that boundary has widened into something vastly larger. The music literally drowns out the playlist.
And this maps so well onto what we know about the default mode network, doesn't it?
It really does.
Yeah.
The default mode network, or DMN, is a highly connected set of brain regions that is incredibly active when we are thinking about ourselves, worrying about the past, or obsessing over the future. It's heavily associated with the maintenance of the ego.
Yeah. We've talked about the DMN before as sort of the brain's strict corporate executive, or like an orchestra conductor telling everyone what to play and keeping things orderly and efficient.
Right. And under psychedelics, that strict conductor steps down from the podium. The rigid control of the DMN breaks down.
Wow.
Regions of the brain that normally never speak to each other suddenly start communicating and sharing information across the global workspace. So in the language of harmonics, we see the modes of the entire brain resonating together in complex high-frequency patterns that they simply never use in everyday waking consciousness.
You know, this framework is so intuitively satisfying. It bridges the hard math and the mystical experience so perfectly, but it almost feels too perfect.
I know what you mean.
Which usually means it's time to pump the brakes.
Yes, absolutely.
Before anyone declares that we've found the literal mystical song of the cosmos echoing in our skulls, we need to take a hard look at the boundaries of the science itself. So what does this all mean for the methodology?
Well, scientific humility is mandatory here. Connectome harmonics is an incredibly young model, and it relies on some major simplifying assumptions about how we map the physical wiring of the brain and how neural activity translates to those structural harmonics.
Right. Not to mention the 2017 study we are heavily referencing here only looked at LSD. And like almost all modern psychedelic imaging studies, the sample size of human participants was quite small.
Very small, yes.
We need broad, robust replication with other compounds like psilocybin or DMT to see if this harmonic expansion is actually a universal signature of psychedelics or if it's just specific to LSD. But I also want to press you on the methodology itself because they used fMRI scans to get this mathematical data.
Functional magnetic resonance imaging, yes.
But fMRI doesn't actually measure electrical neurons firing in real time, does it? It measures changes in blood flow and oxygenation.
This raises an important question, and it is a vital limitation of our current technology. Because fMRI has fantastic spatial resolution, it can tell us exactly where activity is happening in the brain.
Okay.
But it has very poor temporal resolution. It is incredibly slow. Blood flow changes take several seconds to register on a scan, whereas neurons communicate with each other in milliseconds.
So we aren't really recording the live symphony as it's being played. We are looking at a time-lapse blurry photograph of a moving object and trying to reverse engineer the music from the footprints left in the blood flow.
That is a very fair and accurate critique. It's why this is a mathematical model, not a direct audio recording. It produces coherent, striking empirical results that align beautifully with other theories like entropy.
Right.
But it is a mathematical redescription of brain activity. It doesn't prove that the universe is fundamentally made of music. It provides a new quantifiable lens for measuring the brain's complex dynamics.
And The article also includes a stark medical reality check that we cannot ignore. Psychedelics are a powerful tool, not a toy, and they are absolutely not safe for everyone.
Right. This is especially true for individuals with a personal or family history of psychosis, schizophrenia, or severe bipolar disorder. Pushing the brain to the edge of chaos when it already struggles with baseline stability can be deeply destabilizing and honestly dangerous.
Yeah.
Criticality is a powerful, flexible state, but it requires a solid, stable anchor to return to.
So bringing this all together, the major paradigm shift here is moving away from the biological computer. We are looking at a resonant body capable of playing an impossibly rich repertoire of chords. And for most of our lives, just to survive and be efficient, we play a very small, familiar set of low-frequency notes.
The rigid order of daily habits.
But just knowing that the keyboard extends further is deeply empowering. It allows you to view your own anxieties, your rumination, your fixed personality traits, not as the absolute unchangeable truth of who you are, but simply as a habitual chord you've gotten used to playing. You don't necessarily need to take a psychedelic to recognize that your instrument has more keys.
It is a profound reframing of human potential. Our capacity for immense change and flexibility is literally built into our physical geometry.
Which leads to a final thought. I want to leave everyone with taking this entire concept one step further. We just established that the brain's harmonics, its music, are strictly dictated by the physical wiring of the connectome.
Right. The physical structure dictates the potential resonance.
But decades of neuroplasticity research tell us that our daily habits, the things we learn, the things we repeatedly pay attention to, they physically rewire the connectome over time. Neurons that fire together wire together.
Experience literally changes the physical architecture of the brain over time.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which means we are physically reshaping our own internal instruments every single day. The music you play today slowly changes the shape of the wood and the tension of the strings for tomorrow. Even without ever touching a psychedelic, your daily habits, the thoughts you choose to entertain, the loops you allow yourself to get stuck in, are they literally changing the acoustic shape of your mind? If your consciousness is just a chord playing on the instrument of your brain, what kind of instrument are you building for yourself to play on tomorrow?